Hey there. Welcome to Twins Talk Clear-Cut Communication. Yes, we are twins.
And yes, we are two old guys who should know better than to try to tackle the topic of communication in a podcast. But we're going to do it anyway, and hopefully you'll find it informative and maybe even enjoyable.
Hey, we're coming to you from Dummer, New Hampshire, and it's right next to Happy Corner. Those are for real. That's where we are. We are near Happy Corner, but we are in Dummer.
Dumber than, is there a comparison?
It's just dumber.
Oh, just dumber.
It could be dumb, dumber, and dumbest, but it's dumber. Yeah. So we are in Dumber. And again, I'm kind of wondering how the citizens of Dumber describe their state of residence.
Right.
In the city of Dumber, New Hampshire. But that's where we are. And citizens of Dumber, we're glad to be with you, but we're not quite sure what you're dumber than.
Right.
We just don't know. But this may be a perfect town to be having the conversation we're having today about parenting. One of my students asked me what I thought about having children. And I said, don't. And they said, what? And I said, don't, because they grow up to be teenagers. At some point, you think to yourself, what did I get myself into?
Right.
That's fundamentally the lead-in to the conversation today, and I suggested to Bear that I would try to frame this up and give some context to this conversation. One of them is, we both believe that as a parent, you're always working in a developmental situation. By developmental, what I mean is that those children are developing. Not only are they aging and moving from one age to another, but they're also moving from one experience to another. And the model that I like to use when I think about that is that they're moving from a state of dependence to a state of independence, ultimately to a state of interdependence. And we want to frame up this conversation to address primarily those teenage years. They're seeing themselves as a growing adult and seeing you as an impediment to them getting where they want to and what they want. And so all of a sudden, in those teenage years, we begin to see a lot of emotionally charged communication situations that you as a parent have to deal with. And so our view is you have to recognize that a part of this is the natural outcome of that teenager wanting to be independent. The issue in emotionally charged communication is that you as a parent are fundamentally experiencing a lot of resistance or pushback, and that really creates a charge in you. And any response you give is going to just heighten and escalate the kind of communication you're having. How do you deal with that? So Bear, jump in. What's your first thoughts on that?
My first thought is in thinking of parenting little children, their dependence works for you and causes them to concede more quickly if the control is an issue.
Tell that to a mom who's shopping in a grocery store.
That's an annoyance. That's not, to use your phrase, developmental in the human sense. I mean, what you're talking about, I think, and when you talk about teenagers, is every conversation has the chance to be a building block. When you're working with children, they're not at that level. They're not at that place. Now, it doesn't mean that every conversation doesn't have some value, but it doesn't have nearly the potential for real serious angst and separation that occurs between teenagers and parents. Mm-hmm. That is because of that model that you spoke of. Early, they're dependent, and then they need to be independent. And becoming independent, you're the enemy. And becoming independent, you're the source of their frustration. Yeah. You're the source of their concern. And a lot of them don't know how to break away because it's a complicated issue to think, I love these people, but I've got to get away from them. I love these people, but I can't let them continue control.
And I would say it's an issue for the parent. And we're going to say to you parents, you need to be a part of the process of helping them become independent.
Exactly.
So on one hand, we're saying you need to help them gain that independence. But in the process of it, you don't want to take a beating. Yeah. So keep going, Bear.
Well, you said it very well. My recall is that when young kids snuggle up with their parents, they're actually creating for the parents a kind of an addiction to a feeling. Mm. Parents want that coziness. They want that sense of well-being as their kids look up to them. I mean, when you do work with kids in a psychological sense, one of the first things you find out is when kids are given toys to play with or pictures to draw, anytime kings or queens come up, those are always parents. Mm-hmm. And then as a psychologist, you follow what they say about those figures or what those figures do, and you have a little idea of what might be going on at home. But that is how kids view their parents.
And let me transition with that to say, so that speaks to me about the issue of authority and control. And you made a wonderful observation that I thought was very useful, that is a milestone in a parent's approach to teenagers, is understanding what they do with authority and control as they move forward into the teenage years. So why don't you go ahead and comment on that?
Well, what children do, all healthy children, as they move into their teenage years, they've got to find a way to become their own authority. They've got to find a way to take control of their own life. And while that isn't always spelled out so clearly, you can watch them struggle to make that happen. And primarily in choices. Mm-hmm. You watch it in their choices of friends. You watch it in their choices of how they spend their time. And most often, it doesn't necessarily equate positively with what a parent would want them to be doing in terms of spending their time. So often, the battleground is over choices. The battleground is over rules, regulations, things that they no longer feel are needed. Every time a child says, I want to be out past 10 o'clock, they're essentially saying, I'm an adult. Mm-hmm. Stop making me a child. Children go to bed at 9.
And it strikes me what the parent has to do, and this is really coming from you, not me, is be willing to exchange authority for influence. They need to change their view of I'm in charge here to I want to influence you as we move forward, in hopes that that influence will be a permanent part of their relationship. You want to take that further?
Yeah, absolutely. I think parents need to keep in mind that this adolescence is only a brief period of what might be a lifelong relationship they're going to have with their adult children. And if they don't start giving up the authority they have as parents in exchange for influence by the time their children become adults, you'll no longer influence them, because they'll have ripped away that influential potential that you have because you didn't let go of it soon enough. It's a real work of art to watch parents who give up authority just before the kids take it away from them.
And I think that's a great observation. It really affected me when you said it, is that if you don't choose to give up authority, it's going to be taken away from you. If the kid is growing at all and developing at all, then at some point they're going to continue to battle to gain that authority for self in their move to independence. And so your choice is not whether you're going to relinquish authority or not, but whether you're going to give it up or whether it's going to be taken away from you. And I thought that was a great picture, and a lot of us parents don't want to have the picture of it's going to be taken away. And so we hold on to it forever. In fact, I think one of the concerns I have is, as I watch certain parents, I see them looking at their children, and one of their repeated phrases is, why are you doing this to me? When in fact, they're not doing it to them. They're just doing it.
Right.
And the parent has not let go of the fact that this person is now a growing adult, and they're making, as you said, choices and decisions that may not be in keeping with what the parent wants. So I think that's a really good one about this notion of you've got to be willing to figure out when and where you're going to exchange your authority for influence in hopes that you will continue to influence that child going forward.
It really is sometimes as easy as saying, why don't you decide this? Why don't you make this call? What would you like to do? Really can be as easy as tossing that responsibility to them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Getting out in front of it.
You made an observation that I want to use this particular moment in time to talk about. Oftentimes, parents will make requests of teenage children. And then when the child actually fulfills it, but not with either the right attitude or the way the parent wants it done, the parent then reacts. And you had a story that I thought was a wonderful example of how this happens.
Yes, at one time I was counseling a police officer. And they expect to be obeyed. They expect to be in control. And he had a fairly heavy hand. And at home, he had a 13-year-old son who he was constantly in conflict with. And I asked him to give me an example. He said, well, for example, tonight I'll go home and I'll tell him to take out the trash. And what I'll get in return is a sulky, pouty 13-year-old who begrudgingly takes it out, comes back in, and then remains pouty. And I asked, I said, well, what's the problem there? I said, did he do what you asked him to do? And he says, well, yeah, absolutely. He always does. So what is wrong? He said, well, I didn't do it with the right attitude. And I said, what attitude should someone have when they take out the trash? And what he was essentially communicating is this 13-year-old who's trying to grow up, already a sulky, doesn't like the idea of taking out the trash. Well, I think that's pretty healthy. I think there's some tasks you might want to say, I don't know that I want to do that all the time. But the fact was, he did obey. He did, in fact, do what was requested. He just didn't do it with this smiling, singing attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And what the dad was really saying was, no, I don't only want him to take out the trash. I want him to do it with the attitude I want him to do it with the appreciation I want him to have. I said, well, Dad, I think if you get one that he takes it out and you get even an average attitude, I think you've won the battle. The fact that you're going for all three and all three have to be this Walt Disney view of taking out the trash, I said, I think you're fighting a losing battle.
So, and what I'm hearing you say is one strategy for dealing with the emotionally charged nature of being confronted with resistance or being confronted with pushback is to modify our own expectation. Then maybe what we're saying is we're expecting too much. And if we get response and actually get action, we should, in all likelihood, be satisfied with that, right?
Exactly. The very most that I think in some situations you should expect is that they'll concede to do what you ask them to do. But beyond that, for you to expect more and then challenge them until you get that is asking for a fight unnecessarily.
I even shared this with you earlier when we were talking about this particular aspect, dealing with the teenagers. It caused me to think about a very classic article on change and getting attitude change. And he talked about three concepts of compliance, identification, and internalization. And three distinguish themselves by compliance as I'll do it. Identification says I'll do it because I identify with the role and what's supposed to happen. And the third one, I'll internalize it. I'll do it because of the values underlying it. And what that dad was expecting was all three. And my view is that that second identification and third internalization comes much later in the developmental cycle than during the teenage years. One of the things that I made note of when I was trying to think through this idea, I think oftentimes parents feel like what you're asking them to do is juggle a lot of things, constantly balancing this sense of control and this sense of letting go. It wouldn't be much of a circus if you only had to juggle one ball. And so my comment is, yes, you are going to juggle multiple balls whenever you're in this situation. So if you're contributing to the emotionally charged nature by constantly believing this thing ought to work itself out immediately, this should not be this hard, we should be able to get at this easily, then you're back in that place of, I only want to juggle one ball, and that's not going to happen. So other thoughts on this parenting? We want to give some strategies to parents on how to deal with these moments of pushback or these moments of resistance.
Well, one of the things that I've always found interesting observationally is so often when teenagers are in conflict with their parents, when the relationship is charged all the time, they find other adults to turn to. And it's interesting to think in terms of the communication they have with those adults. Very often it's incredibly positive, very warm, insightful, and it's largely because the other adults don't have to be parents.
Mm-hmm.
The other adults are just adult friends, adult mentors. And so often I tend to think, well, if I am in a spot where I can't connect well with my child, is there someone as an adult that I trust that I might encourage them to have contact with my child so that there's an adult that doesn't alienate them, but is also in a position to be more alert to what's going on for them while they're separating from me, while they're pushing away from me and not wanting to let me in. Because if they let me in, then their fear is I'll take control.
Mm-hmm.
They share something important, something meaningful, something painful. Their fear is that I'll have to take over that as a parent. I'll have to fix that. I'll have to cure that. So I think that's an interesting strategy as a parent, is if you find yourself in an intractable situation where every time you say something, it leads to a confrontation, then maybe it's time to consider, well, are there other adults whom my child could relate to that are in the environment that can be that model, can be that influence, the adult influence that doesn't have to create conflict?
I think that's a great strategy. And my reaction is it doesn't reduce the turmoil for you. It doesn't reduce those moments in time when you've got that emotionally charged communication always going on. But it may well affect the teenager so that they begin to change as a result of this more positive communication with this other adult that is not in that parenting role, that is not in that authority control conflict. And so I would agree 100% that that's a strategy we ought to think about in terms of if we find ourselves in irretractable situations, maybe there are other adults we can introduce so that my children can have contact with that will promote this independence, yet at the same time, this growth that we're looking for in them. In fact, one of the things I thought about was that when we've talked about all these situations in the past episodes about when I'm feeling under attack, which often could be the case with parents, we offered some. One was the life-saving model that you offered, which says you get close, but you don't get too close. You don't stand on the shore and say, swim, but you also don't get in there and get pulled down with the teenager in terms of their own struggles. The other one we talked about was curing and caring. Say, if you err, err on the side of caring, because we're moving away from trying to fix it for them. And the moment you get in there and want to fix something, you're going to cause this teenage son or daughter to move away from you because they're wanting to deal with the issue. Another one I really liked and thought about a lot was the notion of calibrated questions. I think that could be a great strategy for parents, is to begin to ask questions that have calibrated outcomes. Talk to me more. How would you do that? Or talk to me about what it is you would like me to do. How can I be of help in this? Or what am I doing to get in the way? So the whole concept of calibrated questions. And then always I'm oriented towards saying, when everything else fails, if you can move more towards being a listener, at least I think you mitigate the emotional character of the conversation by you dropping in the role of listener and really paying attention to what they've got to say. Thoughts on that?
Well, I think that anytime you can pull back, calm down, and be almost, what do I say, a blank slate for these kids so they don't feel you pushing on them, don't feel you correcting them, don't feel you fixing it, you're probably helping as much as you can in some situations. There's a series on right now that I find it difficult to recommend to everyone because there's a lot of language and there's a lot of other situations that people would find offensive. It's called Shrinking. But in it, a father who's a therapist has lost his wife and he has a teenage daughter who's lost her mom. And they're going through this terribly difficult stage of emotionally both grieving, but not knowing how to relate to each other at the same time. It would be tough enough that they didn't have to go through grief, but they have to do that as well. That's a very interesting comment on how you overcome that. So that you can regain contact, you can regain that sense of being connected like you were before. And it has to do with keeping some distance.
I was going to say, and my reaction is, as I've seen just a little bit of it, it's not utopia. Everything doesn't work out all the time. It's a case of give and take. And I think we're faced, when we talk about parental communication, we're faced with this up and down. It's not going to ever evolve into this kind of Cinderella story where everything works itself out. Now, hopefully in the end, it works itself out enough that we feel very positive about the outcomes. But certainly in the presence of it, we don't. Well, we're there again. Time-wise, my reaction is we probably have only addressed a few possible outcomes for parental communication. In fact, this one particular episode, I feel we've been woefully inadequate in trying to really cover the total landscape, but hopefully have provided a couple ideas
until we have the opportunity to talk about it again.
The twins are done talking for today. Now it's your turn. We'd love to hear from you with feedback regarding today's theme or a situation you'd like us to step into during a future session. You can reach us at twintalk46@gmail.com. Remember, no communication problem is so big, so complicated, or so intense that we can't make it larger, more complex, or more dangerous than it already is, almost effortlessly. And we'd like to thank Kevin MacLeod for the score that both began and ended this podcast.